correct name for the company is?
Stemina, S-T-E-M-I-N-A, Biomarker Discovery.
And for the layman, what does it do? Or what will you do?
We use human embryonic stem cells and derived cell types like heart, neural, and liver to test and screen for the toxicity of potential drug candidates. That's the primary and first function. And then we map the small molecules that we identify using mass spectrometry back to the metabolic pathways that are impacted by these drugs that may have toxic effects. And then we can use that to look at how we can engineer drugs to, or develop drugs to be non-toxic for the same applications. So we might be able to choose a little different compound profile and avoid the toxic effect. And then we also do have an oncology side to our business. Uh-huh. And I'll let you chew on that first part first, and then you can ask me questions, and then we'll move on to the cancer side.
Okay. How does your company fit into the global growth of stem cell research? I've read that a lot's going on with biomarkers.
Yeah. Well, biomarkers, interestingly, are it's kind of a loosely used term even among the scientists and the industry, because a biomarker can be a small molecule, as in our case, and that study is called metabolomics, so a study of small molecules that are secreted by cells or organisms in response to a drug or a disease. But they also use the word biomarker when talking about proteomics, which is the study of proteins, and even in the case of studying genomics, which, of course, is the study of genes. So biomarkers can be a very broad category. Newest and sort of the more exciting new developments in biomarkers are in the metabolomics space. And we actually did a PubMed search on microarrays versus metabolomics as a keyword. And microarrays, which are gene chips and work in the area of pharmacogenomics, first publication was 1994, and then it was just an explosion as the pharmaceutical industry and biotech started to use genomics to try to understand how drugs impact an organism or, you know, a human, for example, and then also engineering drugs to affect certain genetic pathways to try to fix what's going wrong in a disease, for example. But genomics is actually quite a ways back in the biological process, and between there you have your genes, which sort of lay out what you can potentially have for characteristics, but you still have to go through transcription and translation before you actually have the actual organism. So let me give you an example. People know that if you have the BRCA1 gene, you have a higher predisposition for breast cancer.
I'm sorry, which gene is that?
BRCA1, B-R-A-C-A-1.
Okay.
And that's one that, you know, families that have a strong familial history of breast cancer, where mothers and aunts and daughters and so forth have breast cancer, often they have the BRCA1 gene. And they often will test, female children in the family for the gene if they have a strong familial incidence of breast cancer. But not everybody who has the BRCA1 gene actually gets breast cancer. So the reason for that is that your genes lay down what is possible, but somewhere during life, other things impact that particular person that either causes them to get breast cancer or not. And many of those things are unknown, but they're, people hypothesize that some of them may have to do with environmental factors. They may have to do with how the genes are actually read when they're translated into proteins, which make up our actual body. And so there may be something in the translation that actually saves someone whose genetic predisposition might say they'll have cancer from having cancer because some other step in the biological process went a different direction. So metabolomics is closest to phenotype, and when we say phenotype, we mean the actual expressed characteristics of an organism or a person, what they actually are in real time. And that's the study that we have, which is closer to phenotype of small molecules secreted in response to disease or in response to drugs, and we believe they'll actually add a closer perspective, a greater predictability of the potential impact that a drug will have on a human, and in combination with genomics may actually be the most powerful tool in that we can say, number one, this person has the BRCA1 gene, and she's also secreting this small molecule, which is closely correlated to breast cancer, so we can predict with much greater accuracy that this person will actually have breast cancer in their lifetime, rather than just relying on the genes, which tell us what could be, but what may not actually happen.
How did you come up with the name Stemina?
Stemina is actually the combination of stamina and stem for stem cell. And the reason that we have stamina as a name is that the metabolics of the metabolism of an organism is the energy system of an organism. So how we, you know, translate food into energy and actually into, you know, power of the of an organism. And so we thought stamina was a good kind of parallel to the metabolomics part, and then of course the stem is obviously part of stem cell.
How is the fundraising going for the company? How far along are you there?
We're good. We're we've actually raised 1.145, so 1,145,000 of the 1.5 million that we're trying to raise. And we still have quite a few, high net worth individuals and angel groups that are still looking at the investment. We're hoping to wrap up the decision from a couple of those groups this week so that we can actually finish the round out by the end of the month. It won't take us much. We only need about 355,000 to finish the round. So.
And didn't you receive a grant a while back from the state too?
We did. We received a $500,000 grant and a $500,000 low interest loan at 2% for purchasing equipment and paying early salaries of some of our scientists and basically operating expenses.
Do you have labs now too, or?
We don't have labs yet. We're leasing a space in the second floor of the Third Wave building out on Rosa Road, and we have the design out for bids right now, but we haven't finalized that yet. And we're hoping that we're going to finalize it yet this week and get our get busy building. We're targeting September to be open. We were hoping September 1, but they're taking quite a long time in getting the space designed and the bids done, so it may actually end up being more towards the middle of September, hopefully not as late as October 1st.
How did the company come to be? When you met Gabrielle Cesar, did you talk about it over coffee and it blossomed from there, or you two met and started talking and how
yes.
did it come to be?
Well, we met when I was the director of YCell, and she, of course, was one of our stem cell researchers.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Amanda.
You're welcome.
And we started talking about potentially starting a company sometime in the future, mm-hmm. With no particular end date in mind. And then I decided that I was ready to do something on my own, and I was going to leave Wharf, and I had a number of different options I was weighing. And so I went to talk to Gabriella again and said, you know, I'm thinking about starting a company. I'm really interested in your technology, and you've talked about wanting to start a company, needing a business partner. What do you think if we go ahead and give it a try? And so we actually said, yeah, we were going to do that. And then I put together proposal about how we would work together, and we actually went to Johnny Dominico's and had a really nice dinner and drank some wine and said, let's do it. So we did. That's kind of how it started. I met her through research at the university. And
are there any other stem cell companies that you know of that are run by women, or is it unusual in that?
I don't think there's any other stem cell companies run by women. None that I'm aware of.
Do you think that how long were you with Wharf?
8.5 years. And before that, I was outside counsel for 4 years when I was at Quarles and Brady.
So a dozen years.
Yeah.
And then you became the director of YCell?
Yeah, so I was the general counsel of Wharf and the director of both YCIS and interim director of YCell. I was director of YSIS for about 5 years, as well as general counsel. Then I was interim director of YSL for about a year, and then in July of 2006, they named me the permanent director, and I resigned as the general counsel, so I was transitioning over to working in YSL. This is Gabby right now. It was about October that I decided I was going to go and do something on my own. And part of the reason was that I really felt it was time for me to lead something of my own, and YSL was sort of something that Carl, my former boss, mm-hmm. said you could do on your own, you'd report to your own board and so forth. But we were both so in the habit of his being my boss and my being his employee that we didn't actually end up in a situation where I felt like I was leading something on my own. Uh-huh. And that was really what I was kind of yearning to do, build something, you know, the creativeness of building something from the ground up. So decided to go and try it.
Were those 12 years good preparation for what you're doing now?
Yeah, they were great preparation. I think, you know, there were a number of aspects that were great. Number one, while I was at WRF, I added a science degree, a master's in bacteriology, so that I could speak the language of science. And that's really helpful to be able to speak the language of science but know the business and legal, which I already had when I came to WRF. I also served on the Startup Equity Committee, so I watched and helped license 35 companies that were based on technology at the university, watched them get their funding, you know, reviewed their documents and of their future rounds, and decided whether WRF was going to add additional capital along with other members of the Startup Equity Committee internal to WRF. And I got to see a lot of their business models, some of the things that worked well, some of the things that didn't work very well. And I think the primary thing that I learned, which I bring to Stemina, is that we did a ton of selling of technology and licensing deals. And with Stemina, a lot of what we're going to be doing at the outset is a service model. So we want to approach pharmaceutical and biotech companies about helping them screen their drugs and then, make sure that we do that in a way where we retain rights to use the biomarkers we identify for future projects. And there's always a balance to be struck there, so that early collaborators are getting something of value while helping you build the robustness of the biomarker profiles that we'll be using. So that I think I'll be well suited to do, because I've probably done in excess of 1,000 agreements myself over the course of a dozen years. So I think that's something that I can really bring value in.
Did you go to law school here?
Yeah.
Did you ever think that you'd be doing this? Did you have a science bent from the beginning?
No, I think I told Amanda this story. She'll have to cover her ears because we've been talking about what we'll do when we get grown up. Amanda just graduated and then went to the Peace Corps, so she's trying to decide what to do for graduate school. When I actually went to work in law, I had a business background and I'd worked at U.S. Bank, and so I always thought I'd work in business and securities law, and that's where I worked the first year that I was practicing, and I had an MBA in finance, but about a year after I started working at Quarles & Brady, a senior associate who did all the licensing work for WRF retired, and not retired, he went to a client. And so I was asked if I would take over that. And I never had any idea what patent licensing was. I'd never even heard of it. I'd never heard of the technology transfer industry, which is what we call the patenting and licensing business. But when you're a first-year associate, really the only noise your mouth should make is, yes, I'd love to. And so, of course, my mouth made that noise, and I went off to get some training about how to do this. And actually, it's been very interesting business because it is an intersection of intellectual property, law, business, science, marketing, you know, it really has a lot of facets. And so I did that work internally at Quarles & Brady and just went there on Tuesdays and Fridays to pick up and drop off license agreements and see what else they had need to have done
to WRF.
Uh-huh. And then when I moved over to WRF full-time, my focus shifted from just doing the legal aspects and more into sort of the business development aspects and the science. So it was just an evolution happenstance that got me here.
How are you?
But I do use every part of the background experience because, you know, even with banking, financial statements and do cash flow analysis. And so there's been little pieces and parts to bring, part of your piece.
Your mom is on the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
What has she thought of your career?
Actually, it's fine.
It's a good question.
Would you like to meet in a meeting room or... Brian was wondering.
No,
it's
fine.
Okay,
this,
yeah, we're fine.
I think we're fine.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Bye.
So that's my Brian. My husband works here. That's how we ended up renting a space here. You know, it's funny. I think, well, I know my mom is proud of me. I think that my mom, when I decided to leave Wharf and start something more entrepreneurial, was very nervous about it. You know, she and my dad are the kind of people that they chose a profession because they came from a background really where they were really some of the first people in their family to get college degrees, mm-hmm. and they wanted to choose a career that would be secure.
Right.
They knew they would always make a living at. My dad always worked for the same company, you know, and my mom, while she moved from being a lawyer in private practice to being a judge, it was a more natural
right.
progression. So she's had moments where she's been a little nervous about how's this going to work out. On the other hand, she knows that I'm really enjoying the creativity of it and the entrepreneurial aspects of it, and while she doesn't really understand what that means, how to do that, she sees that it's working, so she's happy with that. I just, one other thing I would say about that is I remember when I was in undergrad, I said I want to go into business, and none of us actually knew what that meant at that moment. And my mom would say, well, what does that mean, and how do you go into business? You know, I don't know how to help you with that. I'm a lawyer, your dad's a doctor, we know how to tell you how to do that, you know. And it's funny that I actually ended up going into business, even though I became a lawyer, just because that was what was more known in my family. So,
what kind of medicine does your dad do?
He's a radiologist, and he was with Madison Radiologists and at St. Mary's and all these things for 25-30 years, and then he retired, and then he was, you know, bored, not being fully employed. So now he's actually at UW Hospital, just 1 or 2 days a week. Just specializes in mammography. That was something that he worked on a lot when he was working full-time. So he decided that if he was going to work part-time, he would just specialize in one thing, make sure he was still really good at it.
Of all the entities that are backing Stemina, is Wharf one of them? Or
no, we did take a license from Wharf for both the non-exclusive license for Jamie Thompson's stem cell patents and the related culture methods and so forth. And an exclusive license to Gabriella's stem cell patent, as well as one in oncology, which we haven't talked about. And we had an opportunity to have them take equity in lieu of license fees, which they've done with many of the startup companies. But we already had a valuation on the company that would have made that much more expensive than just paying for it. So we're actually just paying for a license over 3 years. And there'll be a royalty on products when we have products, too. So.
And the oncology you were starting to talk about.
So Gabriella has done work in oncology in collaboration with people in the Department of Human Oncology, specifically Manesh Mehta and his group. And Manesh will be working with us either as an advisor or perhaps in a more active role. We're still talking with him about that. But the first invention that we've taken a license to is a biomarker profile for radiation sensitivity in glioma cells, which is a brain cancer. And Gabriella used the same mass spectrometry-based metabolomics profiling to identify biomarkers that will indicate whether a tumor is likely to respond well to radiation therapy or not. And specifically in gliomas, but they'll be doing some additional work now, hopefully in breast cancer as the next focus. And those that particular tool could be used as a treatment planning diagnostic. So it wouldn't diagnose whether you actually have glioma, but once you have been diagnosed, it would help to decide, should we use radiation therapy, should we use chemotherapy, should we use a combination, and maybe even to monitor during treatment to see whether the tumor is becoming resistant to radiation therapy. So that'll be a side of the business that we'll be working on in collaboration with people at Human Oncology at the UW.
When did you leave Wharf, and when did the company start?
I left Wharf, I think my last day in the office was October 13th. But I did consulting for them over the next couple of months to kind of transition things. We founded Stemina on November 16th, 2006.
So it's 9 months old.
Although I will say we founded it in November, but we sort of agreed amongst ourselves that we weren't going to try to go after this in earnest until after the first of the year. I had some deferred maintenance to take care of at my house. My son, who's 10, still had the diaper changing table for his dresser. And my linen closet you couldn't open. And I was working so much at Wharf with all the jobs that I had and international travel and everything. My life needed to be put just a little bit back in order before starting something new. So,
is this less work or more work?
It is less work in terms of hours. Probably, but it's more consuming, I think, because you're always thinking about it. You're always working on the next piece of it. It's in fits and starts right now because, first we built out the business plan. Mm-hmm. Then we applied for the work at Commerce, and we managed to get the grant set there. Then we put our offering documents together and took it out for fundraising, and now we're just about complete with that. But as we're doing that now, we have all of our hiring up on Craigslist and scientistjobs.com, and we're getting all kinds of resumes, so now we're starting to do interviewing, and we're also working on ordering our equipment, finding a way to get perhaps some things used at a lesser price. So it seems like just as we think we're going to go, because we finished the fundraising, now we're ramping up to hire people and get the lab open. I keep anticipating that at some point, we'll just be up and running and it'll be more steady state, but it tends to be kind of up and down right now.
What's been the most difficult part?
Well, I would say the most difficult part for me is that I tend to really want to push the rock up the hill, and I get irritated when things don't move forward. And one thing I will say about a startup company is it's always two steps forward and one step back. So just as you're thinking you've got this all solved and this funding is done or whatever, then something will come up and this party will decide it doesn't want to participate. But just as you're going, gosh, well, how did that happen? I'm not happy that that's not going forward. Someone else will call up and say, I heard about your company. Can you tell me about it? I'd like to send you $100,000, And so learning to stay loose a little bit and not be so compulsive, I think, is the hardest part for me, because I do tend to, throw energy at things and expect them to just move in a pretty steady state forward.
Have you ever had any second thoughts?
No. No, I haven't. And actually, I think this is really what I was born to do. Now, when I look kind of at all the pieces and parts, I feel like it's kind of led me to being an entrepreneur. And I'm hoping that we'll do really, really great things with Stemina, both in terms of the science and then also return to the investors, of course.
Is Madison a good place for Stemina to be?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Madison has a lot of the right stuff. We have great scientists. We have, in my opinion, we have the leading institute in the world for stem cell research, and we have in excess of 75 researchers now doing this research. We have a unique campus here at Madison that offers all of the disciplines in one campus, which really makes this a unique place. We have a medical school, we have a vet school, we have a great genetics and biotech center. We have a great engineering college. We are just a ton of the right stuff here to really do great interdisciplinary science. We have a very supportive governor and a Department of Commerce that has put together a program that I really feel has been a great leg up for starting our company, starting with our early planning grant for $3,000 to help write our business plan, all the way to the lovely package that we got for the stem cell company. We have great potential technical people to hire. We're getting great resumes right out of the university here, graduate students and others that are interested in coming to work for us. The one thing I think we could use more of is money, private money. But for the round we're raising, we're not having trouble raising it. I anticipate that if we had to take venture capital money, that it'd be nice to have more sources of money here. On the other hand, Venture Investors does a really, really, really nice job, and they've had some really nice returns recently with Nimblegen and TomoTherapy. So my guess is that, when we are ready for venture funding, they'll be with that.
Is it all angel at this point?
It's all angel now, yeah.
Would the company have stayed here, or would the future have been as good, do you think, for stem cell research if Governor Doyle hadn't been reelected?
I think that really is a possibility on two fronts. And one, our legislature does introduce legislation every session to ban stem cell research in some fashion or another, and Governor Doyle has been very strong toward making sure that that doesn't happen. On the other hand, I wonder if they didn't have Governor Doyle to backstop them, whether they truly would take the step of implementing some of these things. I mean, the pro-life movement in Wisconsin inspires a lot of fear, especially in the Republican side of our legislature. And it's safer when they know there's a backstop to take a position. I think most people have gotten comfort. I think the surveys say now more than 75% of people in the state of Wisconsin have some comfort with stem cell research in some level or another. If it's just using the existing lines, which we only use the ones that were derived here at Wisconsin from Dr. Thompson, and moving from there forward, most people don't want to go back to having no stem cell research. They've gotten pretty comfortable with that. I also think that his programs around economic development, both through Act 255 with the angel tax credits and the startup packages for stem cell companies in Wisconsin, have made it a very good place to work. I think that with California having the $3 billion, they contact people like Gabriela Cesar. And if we don't support researchers like her, both at the university and with their entrepreneurial inclinations here, someone else will. So I think those are important components to use here. And I'll take this opportunity just to add, whether you put it in the article or not, the legislature needs to support our university. This university is not only an amazing engine for technology and education, but an amazing economic development engine. I mean, this is just really a sin. I mean, I remember when we went through the last biennium and they cut a huge amount out of this UW system budget, and I was there in the trenches with people. I mean, they were really searching for what can we cut? How can we, you know, get by without this money? If we do this again to the university, it's sending a strong message that we don't value this university, and it's a huge asset to our state. It'd be a shame to watch it erode, really.
If this company goes well, could you see yourself starting another one?
Absolutely.